You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 182, the first episode of 2024. And joining me today is a man who, well, I'm looking at him and he looks like he's got the rat ghoul plague. How you doing, Mark?
I'm feeling a bit rough, so it's
fine. Feel like you look.
You pretty much, mate. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you look. Otherwise, yeah, had a nice Christmas, and we're starting 2024 quickly with lots of news.
Loads of news, so much news, in fact. I think we should just pull straight into the news, because we had a day and a half yesterday.
Yeah.
An announcement came out from Lucasfilm on StarWars.com and everywhere else that not only are we getting The Mandalorian and Grogu big screen movie directed by Jon Favreau, filming this year out. We're also getting the confirmation of a season two of Ahsoka, and via Deadline, the confirmation of season four of The Mandalorian. So loads and loads of news. Dave Filoni posted on StarWars.com today a picture of the statue from the end of season one of Ahsoka with what looks like Sabine and Ahsoka standing on it, saying the story continues. So all the gears are turning, all the motors are revving at full power. That's a lot to unpack here, Mark. So let's start off with the movie. What do you make of that news that we are getting a big screen? This isn't a Mando versus Filoni thing. This is something else. This is Mandalorian and Grogu, directed by Jon Favreau. Bit of a pedigree there. Elf and Iron Man 1 and 2 and all the other things he's done. Huge pedigree. What do you make of that?
Well, of all the films to name first, you named Elf. So.
It's nearly Christmas, man. It's nearly Christmas.
This kind of caught, I think, everybody on the back foot a little bit. Good surprise. You know, let's not be negative about this. This is fantastic news. You know, the fact that they are going ahead with a film, but it's meant to start production this year. I wonder if this is Jon Favreau's kind of setting up the cinematic Mandoverse. With no disrespect to Dave, who is still meant to be getting his own Mandoverse film, I wonder if they felt maybe safer hands to have the first one be John and then Mandalorian season four and then Dave Filoni's Mandoverse film.
Yeah.
So it might be like this is kind of the starting of like moving the Mandalorian from the smaller screen onto the bigger screen.
Don't you think though it works in the sense that one of the criticisms that Star Wars has had over the last few years, and we've certainly talked about it plenty on here, is the lack of linked up thinking. Television, of course, you can't not do that. You've got to do that. But now here, if you've got Favreau directing whatever this film's going to be, and then you're working through other seasons of television, and you're culminating with a Filoni Mandoverse, as we call it, film, that can't be anything other than well thought out. They can't just make this out on the hop. They've got to plan it. So that should give people confidence, shouldn't it?
You would hope so. I mean, I suppose also it'll be interesting because I think this will be a nice way of possibly bringing, even though as Star Wars fans, and I think probably of all the most recent Star Wars productions, The Mandalorian season is the one show that has, I think, really hit this general zeitgeist in pop culture. It's a great way to kind of pull maybe some of the characters that maybe people are less familiar with, let's say Greef Karga, for example, bring maybe those characters in as well onto the big screen. And therefore, like you said, you can then push everything forward in tandem. This could almost be a completely one and done standalone story, which means that if it fails, it's not necessarily setting anything up massively, but at the same time, if it works, it can run on from that. So no hint of a trilogy, but you wonder if maybe this is something that they can do as an ongoing series rather than necessarily a trilogy, and maybe hop between the cinema and Disney Plus seasons. There's always been that backlash, hasn't there, of like that the MCU has had, which is I should be able to go and watch an MCU film without necessarily having to have watched all the What Ifs and all the other streaming TV shows and stuff. Now, picture that they use to kind of promote this looks very kind of concept arty. Yeah. Do you reckon this film, or do you reckon this is just maybe a bit of spare concept art that they have used from The Mandalorian?
I don't know. I would think that this is probably something they've thrown together for this project, because it is kind of loose enough and vague enough, and but it's certainly an exciting image. So I would think it is something from this project, which clearly they've been working on for a good long while, and now they're announcing it. A lot of discourse online, and it's the usual negative stuff of people saying, well, this is in reaction to, this is in reaction to something that happened last week. Of course it is. Of course it's not. They've been planning this for ages. One thing I did wonder, and I was so pleased when Deadline announced that there is going to be a season four, was that Pedro Pascal is now, he's linked to Reed Richards with Marvel. He's doing The Last of Us, which has just been nominated for loads of stuff. You know, it's doing really well. He's a very much an in-demand actor. And you wonder whether or not, if there wasn't a movie, and it, this is kind of a loaded question, but if there wasn't a movie, would he be fully back on board, more present, if you like, for season four Mando, if there wasn't a film? He always wanted a Mando movie, and who wouldn't? And now Pedro gets his Mando movie. And so to then say, well, of course, we're doing season four, to have him more on board for season four, it's all good, because now it feels like the jigsaw's coming together now, doesn't it? You've got that Filoni film at the end of this road. You've got other things like Skeleton Crew, season two Ahsoka, all the other stuff that we might get in between now and then, and possible further, you know, seasons of The Mandalorian. Do you think there could be something in that, or is that just adding things together that don't really add up?
To be honest, it could be either. I mean, I suppose it, this is the thing, isn't it? As an actor, at what point do you, when you are somebody like Pedro Pascal, who is leading these massive series, do you then go, well, how much of it is going to be really worth my time to spend 12 weeks or whatever in armor for a Mandalorian film when I could just do the voice? And again, as we've seen, it all depends upon how action heavy it is, and how much the stunt actors and performers to do in armor. But then you can go, well, then would you then just pull him in and give him like top billing if there's only maybe a couple of scenes where he takes his helmet off? Pedro, as an actor, as you know, somebody who is wanting to, you know, work in the craft, is that something that they would want to do?
You and me, let's say, it's just pick you and me, and we watch The Mandalorian and we enjoy the action, we enjoy what Mando is saying, and we like where the story is going and all the constituent parts that make an episode work. But we kind of know how the sausage is made, so we know a lot of the time that's not Pedro in the suit. But does that affect the viewing experience? It doesn't for me.
There were some instances in season two where, like, you're like, wow, in the course of this episode, Mando's put on and then lost 20 pounds and stuff like that. And it's like, and you don't know if that's because they've used Brandon Wayne and they've then used another stunt performer, or if it is Pedro Pascal, you know, because you have no idea because they're in the helmet. And I'm sure maybe, you know, somebody with more time on their hands than me and you could probably sit there and work out like height differences and stuff, and work out who's.
It was like picking out when it was Eunice and when it was Peter in Force Awakens, wasn't it? You could kind of figure out if you were logical about it.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of go, well, you know, in itself, you'd think that having Pedro Pascal, just from a marketing perspective, is probably the thing that you need. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You think about all those EPKs and all those press junkets and stuff. Grogu isn't the most chatty of people at the best of times. So, like, you know, stick a microphone in front of him. Who else is really going to promote the film? You need, you know.
It's not like The Rock and Kevin Hart going out and promoting a film, is it?
No. So there's a part of me where I kind of thinks that maybe he probably will be attached. And I think even if he just does a voice, I think they will probably push him front and center just to kind of promote it and stuff. Because ultimately, I guess it'll be good to kind of get that show promoted and the film promoted in that way. And otherwise, there's no focal point, really. And as much as it's cool for us, all the interviews are done with, let's say, Katie Sackhoff and with Carl Weathers, which is cool for us, but that's not a big headline draw for everybody else. So he's got to be involved somehow.
This is Susanna Malik from Mandalorian and Boba Fett, and this is Fanta Tracks. Is it Fanta Tracks? I'm blind. I couldn't read it. Fanta.
I'm still going to use that.
Are you? Then use it. Even like this dumb broad can't speak English.
In terms of the story, you make a really good point. We talked about this with season one of Ahsoka, how much you really did need to watch Rebels and the Clone Wars. They kind of said that you didn't, but really when you got to the end of it, the sharp end of the story, you did. That image from Filoni today of the statue, the links to Mortis, all the elements there, it doesn't really affect the viewing experience of people who have not seen it that much. My point is with this film, Do you think this film needs to really hammer into that mythology? Does it need to be set after season three of The Mandalorian, or can it be set in and amongst that first three seasons? If they want to do something that's action adventure, would that hinder it, help it? Because Star Wars is very good at prequels and sequels. Or does it need to be a standalone, just Mando and Grogu out there doing their thing? That's certainly what I'd love to see. I just want to see a Star Wars action adventure film.
We had talked about this during the reaction chats for season three. It had come out, but there had been about a 2 or 3 year gap, hadn't there, between the end of season two.
Sizable gap, yeah.
So arguably, you could just say it could just be in that. You could just plop them in there. It's a standalone adventure. Like I said, it's a way of maybe introducing an even wider, broader audience to these two characters. And also, let's be fair, selling a load more Grogu toys. To be honest, I don't really think, in the grand scheme of things, where you've compared it to Ahsoka and Mortis, I don't think you need quite as much of a catch-up for The Mandalorian. No. And the whole point, really, of The Mandalorian is that you should be able to watch it with very little or no experience in Star Wars and get what's going on. It's such a nice little standalone thing by itself. People were able to start watching The Mandalorian season one who weren't necessarily Star Wars fans, and then by the end of it became Star Wars fans. And I think that's why Jon Favreau's been picked for this, because I think he, maybe it's a case of he can come at it from a slightly more broader perspective. Potentially, maybe this is one of those things where, like you said with Ahsoka, that it felt like there's people who are really saying, oh, you really need to see Clone Wars and stuff. And obviously, it's really difficult for myself and you who have watched all the Clone Wars and all the Rebels to kind of go, well, you do and you don't, because we kind of have absorbed that. And so therefore, we just accept what we're seeing on screen and how it's joining up. You look at what John did with Iron Man, and that was very accessible. Ahsoka is really, it's Dave's baby. So if anybody's going to write this second season of Ahsoka and make it work, it can only be Dave Filoni. So you can't direct like a $250 million film and a second season of Ahsoka and develop Mandalorian season four. You know, something's got to give somewhere along the line.
It also speaks to Favreau and the experience he's got, because I mentioned Elf in Jest, and we mentioned Iron Man because it's Iron Man, huge hit, but also he did Jungle Book and he did Lion King, which is like in the top 10 all-time highest grossing movies. And the technology from, certainly from Lion King and from Jungle Book, but mostly from Lion King, played forward towards what happened in Mandalorian. And so Favreau is a genius with that tech. And I just wonder, with the spiraling budgets, obviously the Marvels didn't do so good, Indie didn't do so good, $300 million budgets. Favreau now mastering that tech as much as you can and being the guy that came up with the idea of The Mandalorian in the first place, and having taken two films of that style, Jungle Book did just under $1 billion. I think Lion King did like 1.6. It was insanely big. But from a logical point of view, he's the right guy, isn't he? He's got his handle on the story. He knows how to make it work with the tech in the way like Gareth Edwards does. But what's going to make this film stand out above and beyond what we see every week during an 8-episode season of The Mandalorian? Because that TV series looks like a movie. You and me were at the Ahsoka premiere. We saw that on that IMAX screen. It was phenomenal. We saw the first two episodes. It just looked amazing. Yeah. What can they do now on the cinema screen that they can't do on the small screen? The only thing I can think is that they bring in some big names, heavy hitting. I'm not on about actors. I don't care about big name actors. I'm on about characters. What could they do? What can they do to make this film mind-blowingly cool?
Good question. I suppose one thing that, from a more of a production side, is I think there's a certain level of scale that is missing from the volume. And they're getting better with it. Yeah. But I think we could end up seeing more of a traditional practical live action Mandalorian. And obviously, they're still going to use a volume, but I think it will be kind of like, it'll be a tool, part of an arsenal, rather than we're going to shoot this whole thing in front of a volume. Which, hell, if they want to do that, I'd be well interested just to see how they can make that. But yeah, that's a good question, because like you think you need, I mean, you think the WTF moment at the end of chapter one of Mandalorian, when you get this reveal of Baby Yoda. For something like this, I think if they're going to push it onto the big screen, they've got to have something up their sleeves. Depending on when it's set, Boba Fett in play? Are they going to start to, again, maybe lace it with hints towards the First Order? Or again, is it we're just going to go, you know what, we're just going to use Stormtroopers, like original trilogy Stormtroopers, because that's what everybody knows and loves. We'll let the First Order stuff kind of come later. And that might be kind of, again, more something that you leave for the TV show, where you slow burn it a little bit.
because that lead up to the First Order and the whole resistance stuff, it kind of does feel a little bit like at some point you'll get close enough to the events of Force Awakens that TV will be the place that you'll do that. And they can really go to town and tell that story. But with Mandalorian, you said it, that there is that gap between seasons one and two happen in a fairly close amount of time. Season three is a little bit later on. There's nothing to stop them. After the Looney Tunes ending of season three and where we leave the characters in season one of Ahsoka, there's nothing to say. And I'm thinking, because the kids in Skeleton Crew, which is all supposed to fold in, it's part of the same timeline in the same world. You see Vane, the pirate character from season three, Mando's in it. So, you know, there's characters we know. I'm thinking a bit like the phases of High Republic. There's nothing to say that the next batch of stories, season four Mando, might be set 5 or 6 years further on. The movie might be set quite a bit further on. How long was Ezra lost? 10 years? Probably longer than that. There's no reason why Ahsoka and Sabine don't get home for 10 years. So you could really hop down that timeline and not only move beyond what we've seen so far, leaving that lovely gap that Lucasfilm loves because comic writers and book writers and animated series can fill in that gap if they want. I really wish there was more animated stuff coming. I'd love to hear of more animated things. But maybe they'll just step it forward down the timeline, which really would then, you're halfway towards The Force Awakens by that point. You're up towards Shadow of the Sith, Lando and Luke and all that stuff.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
I wouldn't be surprised if pretty much a whole of season two of Ahsoka and Sabine stay on that planet. It could be the season that Sabine learns to become a Jedi. And that's a transformative season. And then by the end of it, maybe they jump on a whale, pop back to the galaxy. That would be my kind of take. But you could leave them there for two or three seasons if things kind of develop. I suppose it all depends. It all depends upon, like you said, how things are going to fold into the Mandoverse and what this big threat is going to be. Because unfortunately, I don't necessarily think you could have the threat of the First Order be defeated by the Mandalorian and his mates. But at the same time, you could have Din and Matt actually maybe discovering the First Order, and they are the ones who kind of bring it to Leia. But again, we don't know how long that... I mean, I can't remember. It's a long time since I've read Bloodlines, so I can't remember how long they started to kind of get an inkling that things were kind of like working in that. Maybe they hedge their bets a little bit and they go, right, you know, we'll just go back to a tried and true trusted formula of this first Mandalorian and Grogu film. It's kind of like it's one and done, and then if it fails, it hasn't set anything up. We couldn't pick up back on the TV show.
They announced the season two of Ahsoka. They announced the season four of The Mandalorian via Deadline. So lots and lots of announcements yesterday. And it's kind of redundant to discuss them separately because they are all kind of the same in essence. So let's focus on Ahsoka season two. So not long since finished. I think everybody was hoping for more. I know I was certainly a little bit frustrated and a little bit deflated with that final episode because it did kind of just leave you with no idea of when they would pick it up or how or what the conclusion to the story would be. And thank goodness we've only had to wait 2 months and they've announced there is going to be a season two. So I'm very pleased about that. I'm almost as happy about that as the movie news. So given that, there's lots of possibilities. They could step the story forward a number of years. They could pick it up the second it finished, like Last Jedi picks up, this overlaps with Force Awakens. There's lots of options on how they could do it. And we probably won't see season two for a good long while because it's in development. I'm hypothesizing now. They probably won't start shooting until this year, which means it definitely won't come out till way into next year when we get Andor season two. It's a long way off. Hopefully we'll have had Skeleton Crew by then. We'll be into the world of the Acolyte and looking forward to more of that if that connects with the audience. And it all depends on when they set the Mando film. My head says, it'd be great to throw Ahsoka into a Mando film, but it only works if it's set before Ahsoka. If you set it after season two, Mando and Grogu are separated, so you kind of have to set it after the events of Book of Boba. And to hypothesize where you will be with all these storylines and the characters within really does depend greatly on what Favreau writes and Filoni writes and what they do and how they link it. But Ahsoka season two, do you think the story is going to expand? It's not just going to be about Ahsoka and Sabine training on Peridi. It can't be. They're doing a season two, so they're going to recast Baylan.
They've got to recast Baylan. Basically, everybody other than Ezra and Thrawn and Matt is still on Peridia. So you're always going to have, it's always going to be like something happening in that galaxy and something happening in the Prime Galaxy. So you're going to obviously cross-cut between the two. And surely there's a reason why Dave has put both players where they are. I don't think you could write a show like Ahsoka, leave the characters where they were, and not have an idea what you're going to do next. But I don't imagine Dave's kind of gone, yeah, we're just going to park this, because the whole end of that show screams for, well, there's a season two. And I think we were slightly surprised that they didn't even announce there was a season two.
Totally.
And whether
I think
or not...
I think we even said that we were kind of expecting what we got at the end of season two, Mando, when it said, come yeah. next to the Book of Boba Fett. I think we were kind of expecting something like that.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I'm slightly perplexed or confused, I think it's probably a better word. But if we take the story as, like, you know, as it is, that it's only really just starting development, I almost would have thought that you would probably have written a rough story arc and chop it up. A bit like, you know, George did really with the original trilogy. Kind of write a big, long kind of story and kind of go, right, where do we put Force of Break in for the first season and second season? That. So the fact that they're having to develop it, and now maybe that is partly because they're saying that because they've got to recast Baylan Skull's character. Maybe they've decided to pivot a little bit and put stuff onto, like, Shin's character, for example. Yeah.
It's not like they've not had to do it before. I mean, season one, season two, the Gina Carano thing, they had to pivot because Rangers of the New Republic. You know, in the Mando film, for example, Carson Teaver's got to be in there. Now that Hera is a more prominent character in the New Republic, you think maybe Hera will be in it, the New Republic will be in it. And so all these other factors kind of come into play with those characters we saw in Ahsoka being very, very present in the world of The Mandalorian now because of Carson and his connections. So you can kind of see how that's going to bubble up. But for Ahsoka, you sort of saw the tease of it with that great scene with 3PO, Mon Mothma's having issues there. So you can start to see the destabilization of what the remnants of the Empire being part of the Republic are doing to the whole structure. And we kind of know where that goes. So it'll be interesting to see whether that comes into play in both seasons, because Ahsoka really is going to be here and there. It can't just be in that other galaxy, whatever they call it.
No, exactly. They have to move that story along as well, because also you've now got Ezra and the whole thing with Thrawn, so you can't just kind of just focus like 8 episodes on Ahsoka and Sabine walking around as if they're on Middle Earth and stuff. There's got to be something there. It's got to be something that got to help them, I guess, in the fight with Thrawn and with his undead stormtroopers, if that's what is going to happen with the Night Sisters. And again, you can assume that they're not just going to just kind of like just disappear. They're probably going to want to have vengeance on in the name of like Mother Talzin and all those people. So the interconnectedness between the actual Disney Plus series is going to start to happen more naturally. And when you do get those crossovers, it won't feel like it's just a shoehorned cameo. It will feel like it's a natural thing and that these series are running together and it's all one big story.
You said something ages ago that stuck with me. It's one of the few things you said that stuck with me. You said it's all Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so when we delineate shows and delineate books and comics and et cetera, there's got to be an overview of somebody like a Pablo or a Leland or whoever who guides and steers and makes sure all these things sit in the right places for a broader chronology. But nevertheless, it's all Star Wars. So my head says that Lucasfilm would sit there with all these stories. Andor's doing its thing over there and Acolyte's doing its thing over there. And then there's the Mandoverse. And then there's whatever Shomaina B. Janoi is doing and Mangold separately. Yeah. They're all doing their thing, but it's all Star Wars. So you kind of hope that if you're a television viewer of Star Wars, which is a relatively recent thing outside of animation, 5 years this year since Mando launched, that if you're watching Obi-Wan Kenobi, then you're going to want to watch Andor because why wouldn't you want to watch Andor? It's Star Wars. And they're almost marketed as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Andor and Ahsoka and whatever. They don't, to my mind, mention the word Star Wars enough, because that is the unifying factor that will make what you just said work better.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point, actually, because they do very much seem to focus on the character, don't they, rather than the franchise, which may be something that just kind of happens. And maybe this is slightly in part to do with this distancing of the Skywalker saga. You say Star Wars, what's the first three characters that spring to mind?
Han, Luke, and Leia, of course.
Yeah, Han, Luke, and Leia, Darth Vader, whatever. And it's like their story's been told, as it were. And so we're now into this other thing, which is still set in a galaxy far, far away. And that's the thing, isn't it? Also, like, you've got Andor and you've got Kenobi, which is in one time frame. Also, I suppose you could say Acolyte is in that time frame. And then the rest is all in another time zone. I think they're going to start to really learn how to kind of market these things. And I think they've started to kind of work. The synergy is starting to kind of like really pick up.
They do feel more synergistic. And it's crazy to say that, almost like having to eventize Star Wars feels like the craziest phrase ever. Because why would you need to eventize Star Wars? It's bloody Star Wars. But it does sometimes feel like they, I don't know whether it, like you say, is it a marketing thing? Is it a conscious choice? The word Star Wars to me isn't pushed out there enough. Yeah. One of the things I'd like to see when we get to the Mando film, whatever they end up calling it, I don't think it's going to be called The Mandalorian and Grogu. That's not a thrilling title. Clan of Two, a Star Wars story or something. They'll come up with something. I would personally love to see the classic scroll up. I want to see the Fox logo at the beginning, but that ain't going to happen. But, you know, get that classic scroll up with the Mando music playing over it. That main event big feel that Star Wars always did so well. You sat down in the theatre, the screen goes quiet, the Lucasfilm logo comes up, you hit with the Fox intro, you hit with the intro of the Star Wars theme. Let's have that full-on big Star Wars theme that leads into the Mando music.
Yeah.
I just want it to feel like main event Star Wars, and it's not missing on the small screen because that's not what the small screen's built for. But we know, as we said when we saw Ahsoka, you can translate that onto a freaking huge screen and it still works.
They did something slightly different with Solo, but they still had a kind of a crawl.
Why? I don't know whether they're embarrassed by it, whether they think it's redundant, whether they think, oh, that's just for the Skywalker saga.
I do wonder if that's maybe the problem, is that you do the crawl with the yellow text and people start thinking it's episode 11 or 12. But then what you do is it doesn't say Star Wars. It says The Mandalorian.
And or do the crawl in blue, or do the crawl in red, or if you want to change things, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Every comic, every Marvel comic opens up, the first page, most of them, not all of them, but most of them have the crawl.
Have a crawl, I've had crawl for since, 2015, when they, you know, when they brought it back. But that's just one aspect, isn't it? And I think also, like, you know, with the 20th Century Fox, that's just us because we're so used to having popped in a VHS tape, you'd always get that. I know we're so keen to create this new franchise within its franchise, you know, the Mandalorian franchise within Star Wars. I think you also have to embrace where it's come from and the characters that it has actually bred and bled into the Mandalorian films.
Hi, everyone. This is Misty Roses, and you are listening to Fantha Tracks. I have spoken.
One other thing that we learned that we've not really spoke much about, and I don't think we really can because it's kind of dependent on other things, is Deadline said there is going to be a season 4. So in addition to a big screen movie directed by Favreau, we are going to get John and the rest of the team, including Filoni, working on the season 4 of Mando. No idea when, but until we know the events of the Mando movie and where it's set in the timeline, it's difficult really to hypothesize too much about what you get from a season 4, because again, it could be the next scene when Grogu chokes to death on one of those frogs in his pond, or it could be set 10 years later when he's a Jedi and he's got his memory back and he's training students at Luke's Academy.
So Luke's Academy,
who knows where we're going to be? So it's an almost impossible question, but season 4.
This is the thing, actually. They did such a good job of wrapping everything up. Maybe it's a false ending, shall we call it.
End of phase one.
Yeah, end of phase one. I mean, there's a part of me that kind of thinks, wow, did Moff Gideon actually die?
Or was it one of his clones?
Was it one of his clones? Exactly. I mean, and also it's a Star Wars thing, you know, no one's ever really dead. But then it's like, at some point, you do need to sacrifice, as it were, and move some of these characters on. I almost think he gets a call from a New Republic. Maybe he starts off by that little cottage he's got. So somebody just kind of comes down and like, oh, Mando, we need your help. And it's that whole kind of like...
Knocks on the door, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody just kind of does that, and maybe you've got the whole okay, but I'd kind of put that life behind me, and then he's kind of.
It's The Unforgiven. It could be Clint's film, couldn't it? It's like bring the old gunslinger out of retirement for one last, not that it will be his last, but you know, one more mission. And John Wick, you know, he decided he was done. They killed his dog, and there he is. You know,
maybe that's it. Maybe the start of like the Mandalorian and Grogu starts with a crawl, and the opening line is Grogu's missing.
Yeah.
And when you spend the whole of Mandalorian and Grogu, actually with Mando looking for Grogu, and when you only see him on the very last shot.
When Mando offers a frog and you see Grogu accept the frog and then stare into the camera and there's a big sweeping helicopter shot and the credits start rolling, that would be really good.
The problem is that you've been stuck because then we're going to spend at least 18 months debating whether or not Grogu eats a frog or chucks it over his shoulder.
If you want to be part of the action, visit fanthatracks.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at Fanthatracks. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch. And check out our Fanthatracks Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fanthatracks.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatracks TV and Fanthatracks Radio are absolutely free. So no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
Until we catch up with you again, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthatracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.
See, mate, I told you, we could write Star Wars all day long.